I want to continue our look at the history of worship in a lesson I've entitled The Difficulty of Worship. What is so difficult about worship? Well, we're going to talk about one thing that makes it difficult. And the truth is, this one thing isn't a difficulty for us. It hasn't been a difficulty for thousands of years. But recently, in the last 40, 50 years, it has become a difficulty. And I want to explain why that is. And the reason we're going to talk about this right now is because at the beginning of the series, what we're trying to do is we're trying to define and understand worship. How do we look at it? What is worship? What are we doing when we come and we worship God? And I think this fits very well in the proper way of understanding and looking at worship. One of the things that we're going to talk about is this question, is worship worship? And I don't know, that sounds kind of funny. It may not make a lot of sense, but we're going to explain what I mean by that. And so that's kind of our chief question. How do we look at worship? Is worship worship? Is it all the same, or are there differences to worship? Last time we talked about the actual words, the Hebrew and the Greek words for worship. For example, we talked about the Hebrew word shakah, which means to bow down. But interestingly, we found out that there were a lot of people that didn't actually or literally bow down, and yet they were worshiping God. And therefore, we see that to worship God isn't always mean a literal bowing of the knee, but that it could mean a bowing of one's life, one's heart, one's will to God. In other words, you are humbling yourself before God, bowing your heart, life, and spirit to Him. We talked about the Greek word, proskuneo, which literally means to kiss. But when we worship God, we're not literally kissing God, and so this word actually comes to refer to the acts of reverence, showing our awe, showing our love for God. And so in other words, the words themselves that are translated worship show that it is not just merely an external thing. We're not just doing external actions, but that it's an attitude. It's a position of one's life and heart from the inside out that makes up worship. That's what God is after. And so, what we have to do is we need to make sure that we are prepared to offer God that kind of worship. A worship where we are bowing before Him, where we are kissing Him, where we are showing and pouring our heart out in reverence and awe to show Him what He really means to us. When I looked at these words, I could truly tell you that a lot of my worship has not met that level. That my mind wasn't prepared. And this series has really helped me, because even this morning I feel much more thoughtful and much more from the inside out prepared in my worship to God as I went through these actions. And so, as I don't think it's any surprise, the words themselves reveal that it's not just, hey, I showed up, hey, I did these acts of worship, and now I'm done. It's from the inside out. That inside has to be prepared. So someone might say, well, what's the difficulty? What's the problem we're going to talk about? Well, let's talk about how do we view worship. Now, as we start looking at people, examples, worshiping God in the Bible, especially in the Mosaic
period and the Christian period, as we look at people worshiping God, what we find out is that worship was practiced in different settings. Worship was not always the same. For example, there was a formal setting of worship. In the Mosaic period, for example, the worship at the temple, where Israel would gather together to worship God at the temple, was much more formal. There was an organization. There was a program or a order of events. There was some restrictions in their rules of do's and don'ts. Likewise, a little bit later on, as the Jews entered the Greek world and they started to worship at the synagogue, again, much more formal. There were certain places certain people could sit and other places they couldn't sit. If you were a proselyte, you could be in the synagogue, but you had to sit in a certain section. I believe they also had a place for Gentiles to sit, but they were restricted in that. Again, in synagogue worship, there was an order, there was a pattern, there was a series of do's and don'ts. And likewise, in the Christian age, in the church age, there was a formal type of worship. For example, in Acts chapter 20. Interesting, in Acts 20, Paul wants to be part of this formal worship. He wants to gather with Christians. And so he stays in the city a whole week, 7 days, so that he can be there on that particular day, the first day of the week, Sunday, where they are gathering together. And so we read in verse 7, Acts 20 verse 7, on the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. One of the interesting things that we learn is that this formal gathering had at its highlighted purpose was that they were coming together, not just to worship, but the purpose of breaking bread. They were gathering on the first day of the week to take of the Lord's Supper. And we see a pattern in that. We see that as an authoritative example. And so, we at the Brand Church of Christ try to highlight that as our reason for gathering. Every Sunday, we offer the Lord's Supper, we partake of the Lord's Supper. But there are churches that will worship Sunday, and the Lord's Supper is not part of their worship. It's not the purpose for their worship service. I talked to someone not too long ago who described his church as a millennial type of church. And all I can think of is that their worship was designed so that it kind of reaches what millennials are looking for and what millennials like to do. The unfortunate thing is he had no idea what the Lord's Supper was. His church, either he didn't know about it, or his church completely got rid of the Lord's Supper. In like manner, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, Paul says that as you are gathering on the first day of the week, obviously for that formal worship service, Paul says, I also want you to do this. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also on the first day of every week. Notice they were gathering every week. Each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. And so, we do see that God's people at times come together, and there's a pattern, there's a purpose, there is a do's and don'ts, there's some restrictions. But we also see that as we look through worship, we see that God's people worship Him in what we might call a less formal type of worship. For example, let's go back to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel the 6th chapter. where Daniel is, in essence, being set up because of his faithfulness to God. And so in Daniel chapter 6 and in verse 10, we read of Daniel's worship to God. Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. So I want you to see, this is a less formal, what I call less formal worship. What is Daniel doing? He's praying. Now, God has ordained prayer. Daniel is doing the God-ordained prayer. Daniel isn't just making up his own thing. Well, I'm going to worship God through this means or this way. No. He understands it is God who says, this is what I want from worship. God has ordained prayer. But it's up to Daniel. Daniel sets the parameters. There's nothing in the Word of God that says you have to pray in a certain direction. Daniel decided he would open his window towards Jerusalem to the west and he would pray in that direction. There's nothing that says you have to bow on your knee and pray 3 times, but that's what Daniel chose. And so Daniel determined the formality, if you will, how he was going to worship God in the ordained way, in this case, of prayer. In like manner, in the New Testament, Acts 16, verse 25, we see that Paul and Silas experienced one of the worst days of their life, being charged for something they were innocent of. And even though they were Roman citizens, unlawfully they were beaten without trial. And now they find themselves put in the inner prison in stocks and chains. And so we read about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns of praise to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. Again, like Daniel, we see that Paul and Silas choose to worship God in the ordained way that God has commanded. In this case, prayer and song. But it's less formal. They're doing this themselves. They are setting the parameters of what they want to do as far as how many songs, if they want to pray and then sing, or sing and then pray. It's what we might call a less formal worship. And so we ask this question, is worship worship? And the answer to that is no. Worship was done in different settings. Some more formal than others. Some more regulated, more restricted than at other times. And I think that's important because if we don't understand that, then there can be a difficulty. There can be a problem. So what is the problem? Well, like I said, it's not a problem for us. But what's happened over the last 40, 50 years is that we start asking this question, so what can women do in worship? That's not a question that we really don't know the answer. It's a question that has come up because some have bought into what's been going on in our world. What's been going on in our world over the last 40, 50 years is a push to change what God says about what women can do in worship. And isn't it interesting that same time we have in our own society an ideology that is challenging God and how the world views God's opinion of women. Now we know what the Bible says, and we know that a lot of what is being said is a complete misunderstanding of how God feels about women and what the biblical writers write about women. But when churches decide, hey, women need new roles, women need to take a leadership role in worship, and what I mean by that, the formal worship, Women need to be serving the Lord's table and preaching sermons and reading Scripture. And they need to be leading prayers. Well, is that God ordained, or is that a sign that we've let this feminist ideology enter into our view of the Bible? I believe it's the latter. Like I said, for thousands of years, this was not a problem. But it's become a problem in our country. Not in other countries, but in our country it's a problem. Why is that? It's become a problem not thousands of years or even 40 to 50 years ago. And so as we look at the Bible, we have a situation in 1 Corinthians 14. And 1 Corinthians 14 is going to be a great place to look for our worship, because what does Paul say? Well, Paul talks about the formal worship in Corinth. And there were some problems there in the formal worship of Corinth. One that was concerning the tongue speakers. The tongue speakers were interrupting the service. There was also a problem with women. And that's what Paul deals with here in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 34 and 35. That's all right, no problem. Now, another great thing about 1 Corinthians 14 is that Paul, as he talks about the formal worship, is he starts saying, listen, there has to be rules and regulations. There's going to be restrictions. There's going to be do's and don'ts, so that what? The purpose of that worship can be fulfilled. You see, tongue speakers were interrupting. They were taking over. And so Paul says, when you come together, who can speak in tongues and who cannot? Paul says, if there is no interpreter, then you don't speak in a tongue. And you only speak by two or three. And then he goes over to the gift of prophecy. And he says who can speak and who can't, and when they speak and how often they speak. Does that mean every worship has those same regulations? No. This was a particular formal worship in which those rules were not being carried out. And therefore, they were not honoring God with their worship. They were not glorifying God. They weren't showing God what they really wanted to show Him. And likewise, and this is something that Paul really emphasizes, the worshipers themselves were not getting out of worship what they needed. They were not being edified because they were being interrupted. They were hearing tongue speakers speak all at the same time, and they couldn't understand a word that was being said. They got no teaching, no edification. But as well, there was a problem in 1 Corinthians 14 where women were interrupting the service. And so the Bible restricts, through Paul's words here, Paul's words by inspiration, what women can do in the worship service. Now, we're going to look at that passage in a little bit. I want to hold off just a second. But I will tell you that that restriction is not, number one, because women are inferior, or that what women have to say isn't right or truthful or significant. I want to say, number two, that what Paul is writing here, he is not writing simply because it's the culture of his time. It was a male-dominant society. That's not what he's writing. And as we look at this, we'll see why he's writing this. But the basic premise here is that Paul is recognizing something that's been from the very beginning, where God created a woman for the man. And He created the woman different from the man so that men and women could fulfill their roles, and they can have that companionship. So that what God wanted to work and how He wanted to work would work. And He gave the submissive role, not because women are somehow inferior. He gave the submissive role to women, probably because they're stronger. He gave the role of leadership, the speaking role, to men. Not because men are superior or somehow greater. It's the simple role that God has given. But as well, in 1 Timothy chapter 2, 11 through 15, the Bible restricts women from having leadership over men. And yet today we have people saying, no, that's not right. And so these passages are simply taken out of the Bible, and they either are labeled culture, or they're labeled as man-made. But when we do that, when we give women these new roles, there's going to be a problem. Well, there's a problem on our behalf as well sometimes. And what often has come about when we try to talk to someone about these new roles and about these verses is that they'll kind of tell us, well, you know what, you're inconsistent. Because we have a worship service, which we're involved in right now, a formal worship service. We call it worship. Worship service. In which we restrict women from speaking. A lot of ways, men are restricted as well. Unless they're in a leadership role. In fact, during this service, very few men get up and speak. But it's the women we focus on. But then we have another service, which is less formal. We call it a Bible class. In which we allow and we encourage women to speak. To ask questions, to make comments. To speak their mind sometimes. And a lot of times what will happen is they'll say, look, you allow it. Is Bible study worship? Yeah. Is the worship service worship? Yeah. Well then why can't they do it here but not here? And the whole reason is because people are looking at it this way, that worship is worship. If you can do it in this worship service, you should be able to do it in this worship service. Well, that's going to cause a lot of difficulty. A lot of problems. Well, what's the problem? The problem is worship is not worship. It's we're not looking at worship in different settings. And so as we try to understand worship, what it is by its own definition, what God wants out of it, how do we look at the settings of worship, it's so very important that we understand there are different settings. There are more formal, regulated settings, and there are less formal settings. So I want to finish by looking at those two verses and explain why we have a formal worship service and a less formal. Why women are to keep silent in the worship service and why we allow them to speak in the Bible class, and that there is no hypocrisy or contradiction in that. So in the formal worship service, and that's what Paul is addressing in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 34 and 35, he says, let women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but let them subject themselves. I want to stop right there. So the Greek word that Paul uses is this Greek word sagao. And it literally means to keep close, to hold in place. And so it does mean silent. No speaking is the idea. So when it comes to the formal worship service, Paul says they're not permitted to speak. They must keep completely silent. Now again, as I said before, a lot of people say, well, that was their culture that day. We don't have that culture. So we apply that passage in our culture today. Women, we know they're more capable today. We're not in a male-dominant society. And so we let women speak today because that's our culture. But look at what Paul says.
They are not permitted to speak, but let them subject themselves just as the law also says. Paul's not talking about culture. He's talking about the law. He's talking about respecting what God has set in the roles. He goes on to say, if they desire to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home, for it is improper for a woman to speak in church.
Again, in church, what does he mean by that? The context is talking about that formal worship service. Now, let's talk about our Bible class, which I have talked about. It's less formal. But there's some rules, there's some do's and don'ts, so that we could fulfill the purpose of that worship service. That we can glorify God, and we can be edified, that all can learn from one another. We look at it from the standpoint of 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12, where Paul says, let a woman quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. But I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. Now some will say, well, that sounds like it's saying the exact same thing as what he told the Corinthians. They have to remain quiet. Well, this is where that Greek word helps us a little bit. We do a Greek study on the word quiet. And I want you to notice it's used twice. A woman quietly to receive instruction and to remain quiet. Okay? Well, sometimes finding the right word in English to indicate the Greek word is sometimes hard. Right? In English, does quiet, can it mean silent, don't say anything? Yes. And I think we use it a lot of times. But the Greek word here is a different Greek word than in 1 Corinthians. It's not the word sagapo. It's the word hesychia. Hesychia means to remain still in quietness. In fact, in this word, it could relate to speaking. It's not the idea of being silent, completely silent, but it is more of the way that you speak. The tone, the attitude, the way that you speak. And so in understanding that, when it comes to a Bible class, we want women to not only learn, but if they're scripturally able to remain quiet and yet speak, so that they can learn, so that they can ask questions or add comments as well. They're not taking a lead. And so that's why we have those two different settings. And that's our understanding of that. Now, do I believe a woman could be speaking in Bible class and be guilty of violating this? Absolutely. If a woman started getting upset because the teacher didn't agree with her, and she started getting very boisterous, and her attitude became one where she started, rising up and said, look at me and listen to what I have to say. Well, I believe that would be a violation of quietly receiving instruction. And so, that is our understanding. And that's why, in looking at all of these, we understand that worship is not worship. Just because you do it in this setting doesn't make it right in this setting. Just because it cannot be done here, it's not proper, it's not lawful in this setting, does not necessarily mean in this setting it is unlawful. And so what I want us to understand at this point, as we close this lesson, is that as we define worship, it's something that comes from inside. It's that desire to worship God by what He has ordained, what He has commanded, with all of our heart, with all of our love, pouring that out to God, and not just think, all right, I sang, I prayed, I took bread, I took wine, I gave a cut, I've done my worship. It's something from the inside out. But I also want us to understand that worship has different settings. More formal, less formal. Some with groups of Christians, some individual. But whatever be the setting, you have to have that attitude, that humility, that what you're doing is bowing to God, kissing Him, showing that love and that reverence to Him. And so we offer this invitation. If your worship has not been as a child of God, let's change that. If your worship has not been with all of your heart, let's change that. If we can help you to worship God in spirit and truth today, won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing.